Welcome back to the Talking Footy Podcast. Each week across the footy season, we are talking with the biggest names in the game. I'm Mark Soderstrom, and this week, our guest is James Podsiadly. His story is one of true persistence. His dream of becoming an AFL footballer looked lost. He'd been knocked back by half a dozen clubs, but the Cats finally gave him a second opportunity, and he took that opportunity with both hands and crowned a remarkable journey with an AFL premiership. We're talking footy. James Podsiadly, thanks so much for joining us. Mate, I've been fascinated by your story for a long time. We've seen guys come into the competition at a mature age, but very few of them get to have the, I suppose, that fairy tale ending.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Soda. I suppose having a look at some of the names that are on this podcast this morning, it's quite humbling being here, but yeah, it's good to be here.
Mate, take us back. Okay, let's go right back. You're a young man playing in Melbourne, and I imagine that footy was the forefront of your mind and you wanted to be an AFL player.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose footy was never my priority early days. I only started playing footy when I was 17, but it all happened pretty quickly from then on in. I mean, I played about 11 games at the Western Jets and then went down to Essendon for a pre-season in end of 99 and got rookied. So it sort of happened pretty quickly, but then it definitely became at the front of my mind from then on in.
So early on, tennis and soccer?
I started playing soccer and lacrosse was my team sports I played, and I've still got some good mates from my lacrosse days. But and then tennis took over, and I suppose all I wanted to do is become a tennis coach as I was playing through the junior ranks and heading up the ranks of junior sport, I suppose, of junior tennis in Victoria. My thought was to become a tennis coach.
How good were you at tennis?
Look, I was okay. I'd never...
No need to be humble here.
I'd never make the pro tour, but I felt that if I could progress through the senior ranks of state tennis, then the coaching could have been something I could have done.
And then why at 17, what was the grab to football?
I had a lot of mates at school that played footy and sort of said, come down to our local club, which was Yarraville at the time, and come down and play a few games. And I played school footy, and I had a pretty good coach back then who was really, really positive on sort of what I did, as most junior kids do. And from then on, I think the Western Jets come and watch the school game and said to me, you know, do you want to come down and train? And I was like, pretty wrapped, because I was sort of five games in and they sort of started their season already, and I thought I'd just train with the Western Jets for the rest of the year. And then literally 2 weeks later they gave me a game, and it sort of went from there. So happened pretty quick from there.
So it actually looked like the fairy tale was going to happen almost straight away, didn't it? Western Jets straight to being rookied at Essendon.
It happened really quickly, and then you're training with guys like Matty Lloyd, James Hurd, Scott Lucas, who are guys I looked up to, because I were, you know, key forwards and left foot forwards, two of them especially. But so I thought, how easy is this? I mean, a lot of kids play from the age of six and don't get to where I've got to. So there's probably a bit of complacency that sort of set in there, thinking that it's just going to keep happening. I'll just keep rising through the ranks. But we found out pretty quickly that it wasn't the case.
And how quickly did it end with the Bombers?
They were pretty good, actually, the Bombers. Mm. I mean, 2 years there, they were pretty keen to extend that to a third year as a VFL sort of player. But I thought I'd go search other opportunities. I did a pre-season at Williamstown and then Collingwood at the same time asked me to do a pre-season there. So did one there, and then they rookied me in 2002. So pretty fortunate that... in those 3 years, I was at two really successful clubs. I mean, they made grand finals those years. They had exceptional players in a professional environment too, so I learned a lot.
So with the Pies, you played some pre-season games.
Yeah.
Did you think you were pretty close? Did it, again, like you're saying, even though you'd had the hiccup at one club, did it feel like this is happening?
Yeah. It's an interesting industry, this, because there's a lot of people that think they're close, and you can be close, but you just don't get an opportunity, and that one opportunity is probably sometimes really far away. So at the time, look, I'd played those three games, and my first game was on Tony Lockett and Barry Hall as a key back, and it was Tony Lockett's return game after he retired and came back. My 15 minutes for fame was, I was on the front page of The Age the next day in a headlock from Plugger, and I thought that was probably my 15 minutes of fame gone. But, then that year I played at Williamstown, and there was a couple of times throughout the year that, Collingwood was going pretty well, but Mick Mouldhouse at the time got me in the office a few times and said, look, you're really close to being upgraded as a rookie and us playing as a forward. So I remember that, and then at the end of that year, things didn't go that positive, and they sort of, they delisted me.
Just want to go back to Plugger Lockett for a moment.
Yeah.
When you were playing on him, did he say anything to you?
He was quite intimidating, obviously, the size of him. But I remember playing on Barry Hall, and Plugger was behind him. So yeah. Plugger was full forward and Barry Hall was sort of centre-half forward.
That would be a fair sandwich to get caught into, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. And Barry Hall was quite good, but Plugger was, I'm sure, asking guys to get out of his space even back then, and I was one of them. So anyway.
Those couple of goes, so at Essendon, at Collingwood, when it didn't work out, did you blame yourself? Did you blame the clubs? Did you feel you'd been cheated? How did you tackle that?
Yeah, it's a tough one as a 20-year-old or as a 21-year-old. It's hard to do a self-reflection, I reckon. Mm. And looking back at it now, I wish I probably was a little bit harder on myself. But those couple of clubs I learned a lot from, and it actually motivated me to become a better player. So post the Collingwood day, I actually did a pre-season at Geelong.
Yeah.
It was almost 3 months back then. So that was, you know, with the likes of, I mean, 2002, all the guys like Jimmy Bartel, Gary yep. Ablett, James Kelly, Stephen, they all won a VFL premiership.
Mm-hmm.
So they went there in the pre-season, but all the senior guys came back early. So I got the train with, you know, Cameron Mooney, Tom Harley, Matty Scarlett, as a 21-year-old for, you know, almost 3 months, which is great. And then there was an opportunity there for a rookie spot, I think, or a late draft or a preseason draft, and
yep.
that didn't eventuate anyway. So then I decided to go to Werribee.
Do you know who got taken in front of you? Who got that opportunity that perhaps was around you around the mark?
I can't remember. No. Do you know? Have you done your research?
Not that much, because we're going forward to, because those guys are going to be your premiership teammates at some point. Just with that, I want to talk about, before we start getting to the point where this persistence really paid, influences as a young man. Who were they?
Definitely my grandfather. So mum was a single parent from when I was about 8 years old. So mum was a big influence, and she raised me and my sister, which was unbelievable. But my grandfather probably formed that father figure in my life. So his story was a soldier in the Polish Army, World War II, got captured, concentration camp, and then once the war ended, came out here. So I went back, I think in the mid-2000s, to sort of trace his steps before he passed away, just to sort of see what concentration camp he came from, where he grew up. He's still got family there. So he was, a really resilient guy, and some of my learnings in life definitely came from him.
So he spent a year or so in a concentration camp?
Yeah. And then they, I think they got billeted out to a farm towards the end of the war, and he worked on a farm.
Did he ever talk to you much about how tough life was for him then?
Yeah, it was really interesting that he did, and my mum and uncle always said that he didn't talk much to them, but I learned about World War II at school, and I just loved the history part of it, so I poked and prodded him about questions, and we used to watch a TV show called Hogan's Heroes, and he used to just sit there and watch it, and we'd laugh, and he'd laugh, and he just said to me at the end of it, he goes, "It was never like that. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like that." And I was like, what was it like? So then we sort of talked about things and that. So it was eye-opening.
So you were perhaps the one person in the family where he was able to share what it was like with?
Yeah, and I was fortunate enough that I could, when he passed away, I did his eulogy, and I sort of talked to some of these stories, and my uncle and my mum came up to me after, and they'd never heard some of these things. So that was nice.
What a fantastic connection to have with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perhaps, and I think obviously everyone would know someone that's been connected in war at some point, perhaps not as in-depth as your grandfather, but for him to share those moments with you and then you be able to share them with your family members, that's pretty special, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And the things that that generation went through, World War II and even some of the our parents' generation went through with the other wars, Vietnam War, and that is really tough. And you could see some of the mental health issues that have come from off the back of those things. So listening to some of those stories, I'll learn a lot, but it was also tough hearing.
Sometimes it appears trivial, around Anzac Day when you compare football with war and all those sorts of things. But some of those unbelievably tough situations he went through, did that help you develop resilience and help shape you as a man of who you are?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, those stories are relevant to his life, I suppose, and the way he lived it. But I think from a resilience perspective, I think individually, as you progress through your life and you get knocked back or there's things that make you happy or success, that's what real resilience is, really. It's the stuff that you go through, and the lessons learned from other people help that, but it's more about the stories that you go through.
Okay, so knockbacks. There's been Essendon, there's been Collingwood, there's been a little run with Geelong in your early days. You're still a young man at this stage.
Yep.
And a pretty stellar VFL career unfolds over the next few years.
Yeah, I think, I suppose, at that time, starting to play at Werribee, I started to mature physically and also started to mature mentally. I mean, they put me in the leadership group at Werribee pretty quickly, and then from in became the captain of Werribee too. So being a leader or a scene leader, it sort of forces you to mature. And I felt that probably early days in those first couple of years at Essendon and Collingwood, mentally I probably wasn't ready. And then, becoming a leader, I suppose, it sort of helped me in that space.
Running around at Churnside Park out there at Werribee, there would have been some tough days in the mud too, because the grounds were still a little ordinary.
Yeah, they were.
They in the VFA/VFL.
Yeah, but they were enjoyable times. I mean, some of the some of my closest mates now are from the times at Werribee. I mean, we had some pretty successful times. Made a grand final, and I think we played finals every year that I was there, and made a couple of prelims. But I think why you start playing footy? I probably started playing footy because some mates sort of said to come down and play, and then. As you progress through professional ranks, you sort of lose why you start playing footy. But being at Werribee, it was about playing with the guys that you're close to and enjoying your time together.
So you win a best and fairest, win the Frosty Miller Medal, the old Dandenong champ for the leading goal kicker. Opportunities start to present again.
Yeah.
So another pre-season?
Yeah, that was the Western Bulldogs at the time, or they were aligned with Werribee. So actually that year, I can't remember what year it was now, but I did a whole heap of work with their development coaches. I remember sitting down with Chris Bond and Richo, who's now the coach of the Saints, at the Bulldogs, and I'd go through my Werribee tapes and sort of guide me on what they were teaching their key forwards at AFL level. So then at the end of that year, I did a pre-season there, and I think that end of that year they picked up Jade Rawlings potentially in the pre-season draft, and I think my opportunity sort of was gone from then.
Okay, so then there's another knockback.
Yep.
You're more mature now.
Yeah.
Had some great success at VFL level.
Yep.
How are you taking that compared to, say, the earlier days?
Look, I thought as you start to play VFL footy, you just think that... your time at AFL is almost done. The opportunity to play AFL is, the door's almost closed. So it was nice to do a pre-season and learn some stuff from the Bulldogs during that year. But when they sort of said, look, thanks, but no thanks, I just thought I'd just go back to Werribee and go to uni and finish off my degree and do all those things outside of footy, really.
Then another opportunity. So you're collecting footy clubs at the moment, almost like footy cards, aren't you? So
yeah, it's quite embarrassing.
Richmond.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I mean, I was doing exercise science at uni. My phone rang in a lecture, and I was sort of bored in that lecture. Yeah. So I thought I'd go out and answer it, and it was actually Terry Wallace. And he called me and said, "Mate, we just want to have a look at you. Would you be interested in coming down for a run over the preseason? We sort of want to take a different approach to recruiting and think that you could probably make a key back." So I was playing forward at the time, so they wanted a key back and potentially someone that can swing forward. So I did a preseason there as well, which was probably the time where I felt that I was actually ready to play AFL.
At this stage, how old?
I reckon I was about 25, and I just felt physically, mentally, from a competitive point of view, that I was, I was ready to play AFL. You got the opportunity when you were playing VFL that sides would drop elite players, and I got the opportunity to play on some good players, and felt that I could, almost beat them or match them. So that starts to build your belief. But that preseason at Richmond was really good. Got really fit, and then they picked up Kent Kingsley in the preseason draft. And I remember Terry Wallace and their list manager at the time going to the AFL, and one of the issues they had with me was the mature age rookie rule back then was you could list a mature age rookie, but he couldn't have been listed at a previous club. So they went to the AFL to change that rule, and they didn't change the rule. So I went back to Werribee.
And obviously that changed down the track.
So yeah, it changed.
Could have been the Podsiadly rule.
Potentially. A couple of years later, they actually changed that rule, and sides could actually recruit a mature age player that actually was listed before, and which was sort of fair enough. I mean, some guys come into the system at 18, 19, 20 and aren't ready, go back to, you know, the SNFL or VFL and mature, and then they're ready.
Hey, what do you get when you cross a news journal? Three retired footy players and a comedian. It's the kick.
I think you fell in love over the summer. I fell in love Thursday night.
Who with?
Dustin Martin.
Oh, I'll fight you for it.
On Saturday night, join Luke Darcy, Matthew Richardson, Cameron Ling, Sam Lane and Richmond tragic Mick Malloy. For a show with a difference.
It's been overturned and it is a point.
Well, who said it was a goal?
It's The Kick, every Saturday night, live and free on the channels of Seven.
Richmond.
Yeah.
That's done. You obviously said you're super fit. Things develop really well still at VFL level. You pick up the Liston, equivalent of the Sandover and also the McGarry medal. And best and fairest and that things continue. At this stage, are you thinking that is it? That's as good as it's going to get?
Yeah, I think before we move on from Richmond, I think there was a pre-season at Sydney, which is pretty funny, mate, at the end of 2005. So yeah. I did a pre-season up there, flew up there and stayed with a couple of players and as a potential rookie. And that was as another eye-opening experience. But those players up there, you could tell that Sydney at the time, I started to learn about culture.
Yeah.
They were a really, really tight group. And I think that a lot of their players, you know, travelled from other states to live in Sydney and no one knew them. But so they were the only friends they knew were the guys at the footy club. But I could see there that they were trying to build this culture. And I think that year and the year after, they made the grand final. So that was another teammate.
That is quite phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is amazing. And that culture, you said that the Sydney one, the Bloods culture, which became so famous for them. What was it? Was it that bond that they developed being away from home? What else did you sort of pick up while you're there?
It's almost about, you know, when we talk about going on footy trips, I suppose you learn a lot on footy trips about other guys, and every young guy that comes to a football club, you encourage them to go on footy trips because you get to know their personality, what they're like, all those sort of things. And I think Sydney is almost like they were so insular that they had to get to know each other, and I just felt that at the time that they were really close, a really close group, and I thought it was because they all came to Sydney from different parts of the country.
All right, so all this has gone on. You're becoming probably the most resilient character in the game, I'd imagine, and still a very, very good quality player outside the AFL. Tell us about Geelong, the VFL, and how that evolved.
Yeah, so after 6 years at Werribee, I finished my exercise science degree, and I thought... you know, an opportunity presented itself that Geelong offered me a role in their strength and conditioning team, and then they also offered me the role as the captain of the VFL. So there was other opportunities too, but I thought that one at Geelong was too good to pass up. I mean, I had some good friends at Geelong too, doing that pre-season in 2002. I sort of stayed in contact with some of those guys, and I had some close friends there, so I thought it was a no-brainer. And started working there at the end of 08 in the fitness team.
So you're doing a bit of training with the boys as well?
Look, I probably ran most of the gym programs at the time, and at the end of a session, if someone wanted to do some marking or some contested marking, look, I wasn't a coach, so I might join in, but it was more about the conditioning side of things for me.
Were you still looking at all these guys that you're doing some work with thinking, I'm still capable?
No.
You were done by then, pretty much.
Yeah.
Or resigned to the fact that you're never going to get to the AFL.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was pretty headstrong in becoming a really good strength and conditioning coach, really.
Yep.
So my time was spent on that. I mean, I was lucky enough that I could still keep playing, and the club let me keep playing VFL, which was exciting because I got to play with some of the young kids, and if an AFL player got dropped, you got to play with them as well. So, but I was pretty motivated on becoming a pretty good conditioning coach.
Now, the legend goes that you're obviously training, doing a bit of kicking with some of the boys, and the Geelong staff have sort of looked over and went,
"Yeah,
you know what, this bloke isn't too bad. He's beaten some of our guys in little competitions of training." Tell us the real story. How did it evolve?
Yeah, I can't really recall any of those moments. I remember one cool moment for a conditioning coach was grand final week and prelim final week. The VFL had started there, or the guys that weren't in that sort of elite squad of 25 to 30 had started their holidays. So at training, we did a bit of mat sim, and that we had to get some people to make up numbers. Mm. So I got to train with the AFL Grand Final team on that day as opposition and train. So whether I got a couple of kicks in that session, I can't really remember. But I know that some stuff that I heard after the fact that I know that Matty Scarlett and Cameron Ling, you know, the story I've heard is they actually went to the recruiters and the football managers and asked them or told them that we should actually look at pods. So, forever grateful for those guys. But I'm not sure that's actually a true story, but I have heard that that did happen.
It's not a bad story. Let's just say that it happened, even if...
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, those two guys are the ultimate team guys. Yeah, I mean, so absolutely. If they're going to a recruiter saying that, yes, it's a pretty big compliment.
Okay, so how did it happen? How did you get that tap on the shoulder?
Yeah, so at the end of the season, Geelong had won the 09 flag. So I was in my office doing a bit of a post-season report from a conditioning perspective, working with one of the conditioning coaches there. And Neil Baum walked past my office and said, can you come and see me? And the next day, I was travelling to London with Brenton Sanderson to spend a week with the English rugby team. So he was going to see their coaches. I was going to see their strength and conditioning staff. And I thought maybe Barney and Wellesley wanted me to talk to them about some of their, football admin staff or recruitment, initiatives that they do or whatever it was. So I sort of walked in the office and the last thing I expected them to say was, mate, what are your thoughts on being a mature age rookie here next year? And I was like, what's your reasoning? And they sort of said that, Hawks young, stop and coming, Mooney's going well and having a good career, but we've sort of got no one else as a backup and one of those two guys goes down. And I was like, okay, fair enough, but we understand that you're quite passionate in this sort of conditioning space, so we want to maintain that over the next year, so we'll rookie you. If things don't pan out, we'll just give you your job back at the end of the year, and you sort of roll in from there. So they said, "Look, go away to England, and when you come back, just let us know whether it's something you want to do." And I sort of walked back to my office at the time, and I reckon I wouldn't even take a step under my desk, and I thought, "Why wouldn't I want to do that?"
Yeah.
So it was an opportunity I've been sort of waiting for 10 years.
First person you called, who was it?
I can't remember now. Yeah, good question. Good question. I think that the guy at the time was Dean Robinson, was the head conditioning guy, and I actually spoke to him about it straight away, and whether he had a bit of a smile on his face, whether he knew that that was going to be the case, but he just sort of said, "You're crazy if you don't do that." But
did you talk to family pretty quickly too?
I'll let Mum know. Mum's not a massive footy person, but I sort of let her know. So she didn't probably understand the whole process at the time. But Mum's always been really supportive.
Obviously, with all these different knockbacks in there, did you speak to your mum about them? Did she actually, like you said, she didn't know the process that well, but she's thinking, look, my son's clearly passionate in this area.
Yeah.
He's got so close on so many times. Did she ever give you much advice in that sort of stuff, or she let you go about
it? Yeah, parents in footy, and you meet a lot of parents in the role that I'm in now, and they're always passionate about their son or their daughter, whatever pursuit of life is. So I think they look at things with rose-coloured glasses on, and Mum was always really positive about what I was achieving in football, so she probably didn't understand why I wasn't. But the reality of it is the industry's not like that. It sucks you in and spits you out pretty quickly.
You become a rookie. Phenomenal. Well, fast forward, let's go to it. You finally get to your first game.
Yeah.
So you're round 3, 2010. How did you find out you were making your AFL debut?
Yeah, I still remember that pretty vividly. I mean, I played the preseason games as a key forward, and Blake Carosella was my forwards coach, and obviously Bomber was the coach back then. And the first two games of the season, I was still on a rookie list. They didn't select me. But I remember on the Monday after round 2, I was at the drink station at Geelong getting a drink, and Bomber walked past and just tapped me on the shoulder. He goes, "You're playing this week." I was like, "It's Monday." He goes, "You're playing." I was like, wow. So they upgraded me, and we flew to Perth and played my first game over there against Freo.
28 years of age.
Yeah, 28 years of age. I think it's one of the oldest guys in 40 years, which is not a stat you want to keep, but it was great.
Here's Ablett. Dodds there with him. Burns from the corner. Gets it to Pozziani. He marks 1 metre out. Podsley-Ardley will come in and kick the goal. His first goal in league footy. And Geelong have kicked 5 in a row.
So from the Western Jets, just taking up footy at 17, getting a taste at Essendon, a little bit of time goes by before this particular moment. What did you realise what a ridiculously amazing journey that had been for you to get to that point to play that first game?
No, because you don't really have time to reflect. Yeah. And you have time to reflect maybe. You don't even have time to reflect when your career's done. This is probably the first time I've had to do this, so thanks. Okay. So, yeah, I appreciate that. But, I mean, a lot of my close friends, you know, thought it was a pretty good story and that. But at the time, you just sort of, you're living in the moment and I'm thinking about, now I've got to get a kick here. Yeah, but, you know, I've waited 10 years. I'm highly motivated to play well. But, you know, the voices in your head start to say, what if you don't get a kick? And the whole week was about, you know, subduing those voices and just focusing on what I had to do for the team. And that was the biggest thing about Geelong, was just coming in and playing your role. And if you played your role, you got rewarded. And I thought that was pretty easy.
You've got the longest road trip. Well, Shanghai didn't exist at that point. So you've got the longest road trip over to Perth.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a different build-up to normal. Did it feel the whole novelty and the whole bit of, I'm about to do what I've always wanted to do for, you know, 11 years or so. Did that whole process become overwhelming, or within the stride, ready to go, concentrating on Freo?
No, it wasn't overwhelming at all. It was quite bizarre. My wife at the time flew over. She's my wife now, but she was my girlfriend at the time, sorry. And my mum and my sister flew over with her husband. So I had some close family there, which was great. So it didn't feel foreign. I was just going out there to play footy, really, and that's all I focused on.
Did you feel like you belong when you were out in the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I took my first contested mark, like I used to love taking contested marks, and I used to work on that a lot at training, whether it was VFL or AFL. But when I took my first contested mark, I thought, well, it's just footy and keep playing from here, really.
So you didn't, the step, which so many people talk about from that state league level to AFL level, and obviously you took to it like a duck to water and had a brilliant first year. Did you feel like there wasn't as big a step? Did you feel, you know, physically you were sensational for it and mature, but
physically it was fine. The speed of the game obviously was a lot quicker. But I remember Bomber gave me some advice early days in those first couple of practice games we played in the preseason competition. Was I was probably trying to do too much, thinking that I had to play at another level. Mm. But Bomber said, you've been playing footy and you've been playing at the level that we need you to play. So just go out and play. Don't try and like do too much. Don't try and take a heap of people on or whatever it was. So he actually gave me some good advice. Just focus on the next contest effectively, and that's what I did.
I think, 19 games that year?
Yep.
Kicked a bunch of goals.
Yep.
Phenomenal. And you picked up 13 Brownlow votes.
Brownlow
votes.
That's actually another funny story. I was I was at my in-law's house in Albert Park with Tom Hawkins watching the Brownlow that night, and we were having a couple of beers, and my name kept popping up on the screen, and halfway through the night, I'm in the top 5. And Hawkey's like, you know, one of the loveliest guys you meet, and he's like, biggest smile on his face and all over, and he goes, mate, we've got to go. Like, Crown Casino's around the corner from Albert Park. We just got to go. I was like, we can't go. Like, we just can't rock up to the Brown. He goes, mate, we've got to go. Like, jeans and a T-shirt. Let's just go there. So anyway, I can't remember where I finished that on the night, but I was in the top 5 at one point, and Hawkey and I rocked up to the Crown Casino about 11 o'clock at night, and went to the sports bar and had a few beers, and then all the players started coming in after the after parties and that, and we just sat around and talked. It was a really good night, actually. Pretty funny.
That first year, well, that is your fairy tale, even before it gets better and better.
Yeah.
You know, 12 months on. How did you feel at the end of that first year? Did you feel satisfied? Is this like, I knew I could always do it? Or was it still you were just getting caught up in, this is going beautifully?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I felt was valued, really. Mm. I mean, Geelong signed me for a 2-year contract too at the end of that. So I was, 29 years old. So those 2-year contracts, I never got in the VFL even. But, so that I actually felt valued from a good club with good people in it. And I will always be grateful for that.
You know, I know you said you haven't had a lot of time to reflect on it, but even at this point now, like, that first year is brilliant. Do you realise what you've achieved?
No, I remember that first year. I mean, it was, I knew I was playing well, but I really thought I was just the guy that played a role in a good team. really. And that's what Geelong was. I mean, all the players that have played there walk away knowing they played with good players around them and a good culture and a good game plan and all those sort of things. It made a massive difference to the individual. And, you know, some of those guys are absolute stars of the game, as we know. But the reality of it was we had a good club, a good team, and we just played, a good brand of footy.
And then within a year of that time, you're a premiership player at AFL level.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is just a brilliant outcome.
Yeah, I remember that the end of that my first year, I mean, yeah. Bomber left. I think Tom Harley left the year before as captain, so it was Lingy's first year coming. Gary Ablett left to go to the Gold Coast that year, so and then Chris Scott came in, and everyone was sort of talking about how Geelong's era had passed and that they were too old and too slow. And I remember Scotty coming in and he's a really intelligent coach. I mean, Bomber was a fantastic coach and one of those guys that a lot of people at the club learnt a lot from in terms of being hard at the ball, teaching players how to win the contest, and obviously valuing defence. And Scotty came in with a really high value on defence too, so nothing really shifted there. But what Scotty did was actually just refine everyone's roles. I think at the time it was a bit of a, I was only there for a year, but everyone else sort of said at the time it was a bit of a freshen up of the group, and everyone just had more clarity in their roles, and maybe changed our game style a little bit from a defensive perspective. But we all knew we could score and win the contest. But from there, I mean, we were pretty confident we could shake it.
So after that 1 year, you're cemented a role into probably the strongest team in the competition or thereabouts at that time.
Yeah, I never felt cemented though. Like, yeah. I mean, the one thing I did have with Scotty, I had a meeting early days, and he I think he said to me that he actually rated the way I played with just providing a contest ahead of the ball. So that gave me a whole heap of belief going into that pre-season and then in that season as well.
What was his instructions to you? You said he sort of simplified things and that. What was your instruction during 2011?
Yeah, I think playing as a key forward in the AFL, even now, it's one of the toughest positions to play. So, you're dealing with an opponent, you're dealing with team defence coming back on you, you're dealing with your teammates' opponents all flying in. So it's actually a hard position. But what all he said to me was bring the game back to a contest. If you compete, bring the ball to ground, jump at it. You're going to clunk a few, but you'll just bring it down to guys like Chappie, Stevie Johnson, Matty Stokes, Shannon Burns. These kind of guys at your feet, they'll do the rest.
Hi, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to remind you of some of our other episodes of the Talking Footy podcast. There's Trent Cotchin.
That was the moment that it all came to a head and tears were even shared. So I've done a lot of thinking from post-season. We were obviously disappointed with the year that we had put together.
Jimmy Bartel.
And then to make it even worse, I got out of the club, I got home, my phone starts ringing, it's Bomber. He'd forgotten to spray me a few things, so I was at home. He's giving me another sip. I'm at home, and he's giving it to me. He's made me nervous over my dinner.
And Bob Murphy.
We need to have this out, Murph. I don't think we've ever done it face-to-face. Talk about the moment that I knocked you out cold at home.
You know what? I actually knew.
Did you? You knew it was me, did you?
I woke up and I instinctively knew. I knew I'd mouthed off at you and then I turned around, I ran away and then I was out and I just knew. Das has knocked me out.
Make sure you check them out and be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'll let you get back to Sodas and James Podsiadly.
So 2011, you play 23 games. I think you win the goal kicking at the Cats. You were there because, they're saying Hawks developing.
Yeah.
And these changes were taking place. You've won the goal kicking at a club in a premiership year.
Yeah, but that's it's a result of it's things that happen around you, really. And most goal kickers do the finishing, and I was fortunate in a good team to do that.
Tell us about grand final day 2011.
Yeah, the grand final week was really, really exciting. We as a team, I remember being really confident that we're gonna win. We smashed Collingwood in the last round of the year by 100 points, and we just didn't think that they could come back from that loss. We played pretty well in the qualifying final and the prelim final, so we were pretty confident that week. And for a guy that doesn't like a lot of attention, you just love the fact that in the last week of September, all the attention is on two teams from around the country. So the fans get to all the training sessions. It's packed. It's a packed house at Kidinya Park. The media attention's on you. But what Geelong did really well that week was just keep things normal. And I tried to do the same at home. And so that week was exciting. But at the same time, it was pretty annoying. And then grand final day was obviously the grand final. Nerves are in, but when you look around the room, you've got Cameron Ling, who's a two-time premiership player at the time, captain, Joel Selwood, who's probably the most influential person or inspirational person I've seen in football around you, James Kelly, Joel Corey, who's probably the most underrated person, Matty Scullett, all these guys around you thinking, yeah, we'll get it done. So, you know, you're confident.
Do you remember going to bed the night before the grand final? Do you remember what you were thinking?
Yeah, I just did my normal routine, watched some telly, and had a pretty good night's sleep.
So you weren't, didn't feel overawed at all or anything like that?
No.
I remember watching that grand final. I was sitting there, and I always loved your story because of the persistence and the resilience. And you popped the shoulder early in the game. Yep. Tell us what was going through your head.
Yeah, halfway through the second quarter, I remember just trying to... I hadn't taken a mark in the game yet. I had a couple of possessions, but I knew that I hadn't taken a mark, so I just tried to jump at a ball really aggressively and try and cluck it, and my leg sort of got taken underneath me and landed on my elbow, and my shoulder popped.
Now, this is a casualty for the Cats.
He looks in a really bad way.
Podsy Adley, I think, does.
Well, you just see the pain, writhing in pain, still on the ground.
What it was, Hutto, was a big contested mark.
Dislocated shoulder by the looks of things, boys.
He's in a lot of pain, just landed awkwardly, Doc.
Yeah, they're trying to put his shoulder back in on the ground. He's in an enormous amount of pain.
It was pretty painful, but the pain sort of subdued a little bit, so it wasn't too bad. And I thought if we could pop it back in, I could probably play on, but they just couldn't get it back in, out in the ground. I mean, Jeff Allen, the doctor at the time, Chris Bradshaw,
the former pole vault.
Yeah, yeah, Chris Bradshaw. Now we're out in the ground with me, trying to pop my shoulder back in, and it wouldn't go in. And anyway, I got stretched off, went to the rooms, and the only way I could get back in is if I got on the green stick. And they lift the physio bench right up at the time, and I think half time was almost there, and they sort of swung off my arm to sort of pop it back in. And once they popped it back in, I got that relief, but I wasn't going to go back on. Which was. Well, I couldn't go back on because at the time it was a sub. Yeah. I got subbed off. Yep. So, but anyway, yeah. So then I was pretty high, actually.
you gave the stick a fair workout?
I gave the stick a fair workout and ended up sitting on the bench in the last quarter and just watched the boys absolutely do what I thought they were going to do.
At what point were you sitting there going, we're going to win this flag?
Well, in the rooms on the physio bench, I was probably more worried about my shoulder, and my family were there, and I had the Ron Watt, who was the PDM at the time. I remember Cam Mooney came down. He wasn't playing the day, but he came down and had a chat. But I remembered getting sort of dressed after the after getting the shoulder back in, thinking, oh, all right, it's grand final day. Better go back out there. We're going to win a flag. But I can go back out and sit on the bench, and that's what I did. But I was pretty confident the whole week we were going to win it, really, to be honest. So there wasn't a time in the game that I thought, oh, geez, that's changed.
Did you have, obviously celebration's amazing. It was a third one in, seven, nine, 11.
Yeah.
Did you have a time at any point after it happened to sit back and go, this has been an astounding journey?
No, because you're
just going hard.
That week is one of the most enjoyable weeks, and Geelong have always been known for their Mad Monday shenanigans and the dress up and stuff. And I mean, that was unbelievable that week. And you finish every season effectively in your career for me, bar one, having a loss. Mm. So there's some sort of bitterness in your mouth, but when you've won the last game of the year. It's pretty special, so there's nothing that can dampen your mood. So you're on this big high. Then there's alcohol involved too, which is even better.
Okay, the Mad Mondays, Geelong traditionally, probably the trailblazers in modern times for just going to the next level in terms of the outfits. Was Matty Scarlett the best?
Easily, Matty Scarlett, James Kelly. We're definitely the best, but from a preparation point of view, Matty Scarlett was, and Corey Enright were the best in their costumes.
Matty Scarlett, now I did hear a story once that he'd come as Hannibal Lecter.
Yep.
He had the mask and everything.
Yeah, they wheeled him in on a trolley, I think. Yeah, a legend.
Is it true that he initially got a mask sent over from America, but he didn't like it, so he asked for another one to come back that was a better looking one?
That would sound like Scarlett. Yeah. Attention to detail in everything he does. Yeah.
How far out were some of these costumes planned?
Well, the amazing thing was that, you know, we always got told not to talk about Mad Monday in any other club I went to, that you shouldn't talk about it. But Geelong talked about it pretty openly in the change rooms, but they were still successful.
From how far out?
Some players would start thinking June, July, I reckon.
Trying to work out their outfits.
Trying to work out their outfits. And some guys had to talk about it because they actually paired up.
Yeah, so, of course. Well, we did see Bartel and a few others.
There's a controversial one with James Bartel and Mitch Duncan, but it's on... on the humour space.
Ronald McDonald, of course, Cameron Ling, outstanding. Yeah. That was his partner that stayed home to put that together, I believe, one night and didn't even come out and celebrate into that.
Cameron Ling was, he was actually always probably jeans and a T-shirt like Andrew Mackie. Andrew Mackie did no preparation whatsoever for his entire time at the club and my entire time at the club. I'm not sure what he's like now. But, Cameron Ling, as Ronald McDonald, taking the mickey out of himself, is always pretty good.
Best outfit that you had over your
Look, day? I was pretty stock standard, mate. I probably bought mine online. I had Fred Flintstone 1 year, which was the year we won the flag, and I had it in a sling. But I have an arm in a sling, but other than that, I was pretty boring.
The 4 years you had at Geelong at that level, all fantastic. And you played some consistent footy and kicked a lot of goals.
Yeah, and that was a result of some good coaches, really. I mean, coaching, I suppose, coaching now is a great space to be in. But at the time, as a player, you don't realise how much of an influence that coaches have have on you from a week to week basis. I mean, you look back and think about the things that coaches have taught you over a macro period. But right now, the week to week stuff, that watching vision. I mean, James Riley for me was one that was fantastic. Blake Carousella, Brenton Sanderson, and then also Scotty as a senior coach. So, my success at the time at Geelong was definitely due to some of the coaching, but also the culture and the players we had. So I don't sort of think much past that when I think about my time there.
Chris Scott capable of a good spray?
We were pretty successful. Won a few games. I remember there was one when we were playing GWS. Might have been their first or second year in the comp, and we might have been about 5 goals down at quarter time, and he gave us a good one. But he is actually quite measured, to be honest. And one thing he did do really well was that it was really easy for him as a coach to view the game at that sort of level three on a grandstand. But he continued to ask players and about what it's actually like at that ground level. So that's something that sort of stuck with me.
Geelong's performance at the home ground is phenomenal. Yeah. And you were there as that was all rolling on. And it's still going to this day. And you witnessed it recently with Adelaide as an assistant coach. It is a remarkable record, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously some of first of all there's 95% Geelong fans there. Players get to stay at home. They know that environment. You're in your actual home change rooms, which you're there every day. So there's a bit of familiarity around that, which definitely helps them. But the ground as well is a little bit different than other AFL grounds. And Geelong play that ground better than anyone.
I think it's something like, when we look at Adelaide Oval here, it's something like 8 metres more narrow.
Yeah.
How much of a difference does that make, and how big is the advantage? Obviously, it's great success, but how big is the advantage for Geelong on that deck?
Yeah, you probably don't realise the advantage until you leave, to be honest. Okay. And at the time, you just think that it's a normal AFL ground. But I reckon when you travel around, you train at other grounds or you play at other grounds, I think the ground being a bit more narrower is more conducive to a contest. And if you look at, Bomber Thompson and his coach at the time, Brendan McCartney, always taught Kenny Hinckley, always taught players how to be good in the contested situation. And the ground's a little bit conducive to that too. So, I mean, Geelong have always been a good contested side, and we see that now.
Your 4 years at Geelong wrapped up there.
Yep.
You ended up in Adelaide, I think, the last day of the free trade period there, free agency period. you obviously still thought there's some good footy in you.
Yeah, I mean, sitting down at the end of the year with Chris Scott, I probably didn't see them not offering me a contract, to be honest. And then sitting down with Scotty at the end, it was tough to take. But at the same time, like, you can't be too sad about that specific moment, because I had some great times there and the opportunity Geelong gave me to play AFL footy. So I was never bitter on the club or Scotty, and caught up with Scotty for dinner after the delisting. But I mean, speaking to David Noble and Brendan Sanderson at that time, and had some interest in some other clubs as well, I just thought Adelaide was a really good fit for not only myself footy, but also for my wife coming over here and experiencing living in Adelaide, and we've really enjoyed it.
Obviously, you had that great first year at Adelaide too. You signed for a couple?
Yep, signed for a couple.
Really great first year as well. You just continued on where you'd been at Geelong?
Yeah, I mean, I think I sort of prided myself on preparation and coming to Adelaide. I knew that they actually prepared really well from a conditioning point of view, from a game knowledge point of view. So I felt pretty confident that we're going to have a pretty good year. We didn't make finals, but being able to prepare in a professional environment like Adelaide was, it got the best out of me still.
In your second year, you didn't play a senior game.
No.
Yet you won the best team man award
at
AFL level.
Yeah.
That is a great achievement.
Yeah, it's an award. I think I said on the night when I got it, it's an award that I've seen a lot of good people win over my 17 years of AFL football, and the people that I've seen win them, I've always looked up to them. So to win it in my last year was really humbling, quite a big honour, and it's something that is one of my favourite awards.
All the more remarkable though, because you didn't play a senior game, yet you had a huge role through the SANFL, the Sandful there, developing your future stars at the Adelaide Footy Club. And I think that makes it almost unprecedented, I think.
Yeah, well, I think playing SANFL footy that year, it almost took me back to my days at Werribee, where I sort of said to you before about you played with your mates, you actually enjoyed it, you knew you could play well at that level. And most players that come back from AFL, the reason why they don't play at that level is they're not really that motivated, and they lose a bit of speed or whatever it is. But I still felt that I had that, and all that was going to stop me was my mindset driving to a game. So driving to a game after playing at AFL level, you're sort of thinking, I don't really want to be here, but the change rooms are smaller and all these sort of things. But the reality is, once the balls bounce, your competitiveness takes over, and you don't want the guy standing here or the team to beat you. So I actually enjoyed that year.
Your last year of competitive football, we said, was spent in the SANFL.
Yeah.
Your last two games, you finished your football career on an amazing note. You kicked 20 goals over those last 2 weeks. It's not a bad way to go out.
Yeah, well, you're only as good as your last game, sober.
Exactly. And what did you kick in the last game?
11-7 or something. Which is why I haven't played since, because I continue to tell my close friends that you're only as good as your last game. But look, at the time we're pushing to play finals in the SANFL, the first time the club would have played finals, and we missed out. So the last couple of games really was just I knew it was going to be my last couple of games, and I told some friends, flew over from Melbourne, my family flew over from Melbourne as well to watch them, and they were a bit of fun.
11-7, I think you just missed out on the Ken Farmer Medal, the leading goal kicker, equivalent to the Frosty Miller one you won years ago. You only missed out by one goal in the end.
Yeah, I know. So anyway.
Pods, look, it is a fantastic story. I love it. And you said at the start of this that you looked at some of the people that have been on the Talking Footy podcast and thought, well, do I belong?
Yeah.
There is no doubt that you belong, which is fantastic. And one more thing I want to check with you too. This will probably go to air before Adelaide play Geelong again. And obviously you've just come off a loss to them recently. And Geelong have no doubt had the wood over Adelaide for a little while away and at home. Is there anything up the sleeve for them in a few weeks' time?
No, well, I think, look, we didn't really bring our contested brand last time we played them. And you know that the Selwoods, the Dangerfields of the world bring that every week. So our guys have just got to bring that in the next game we play them.
James Potts-Hadley, mate, it's an absolute pleasure. Like I said, I think so many people have loved your story. And the fact that there's a cherry sitting on the top, that it's a premiership, I think is absolutely remarkable. And no doubt your granddad would be very, very proud, mate, that you've developed into a fantastic young man.
Thanks, Soda.
Well, if you enjoyed this episode of the Talking Footy podcast, please make sure you leave us a review. It's pretty simple. Jump on iTunes, search Talking Footy podcast, and give us a rating and review. Even leave us a comment on who you want to hear from next. And don't forget to check out our other episodes, including Eddie Maguire, Trent Cotchin, there's Bob Murphy, player manager Paul Connors, and also Nick Knack. Keep checking in for a new episode every week. We're talking footy.